Agenda is in the IRC window. Are there any additions or changes to the agenda today? Okay, we're going to move 133 agenda, or the issue number 133, up to the first item since Denny's here from Wikidata. Okay, so today on the agenda we have issue 133, add container colon language as a pattern, a markup pattern. Issue 134, which is the same kind of thing but using ID, a container and having the keys as IDs. We have a discussion on JSON-LD grammar and reconsidering the prefix suffix separator as well. Okay. So no other changes to the agenda. Let's go ahead and get started with issue 133. Actually, I should hold that for half a second. We also have a publication, an FPWD publication, coming up on July 12th of JSON-LD syntax and the API. Marcus, you're up to scribe today. Would you mind?
No problem. Can you hear me,
yep.
By the way?
I can, yes.
Yeah, Manu, yeah. Actually, I wonder if we also should go over the IPR status and what's gone on with that. And then I think also the whatever the protocol is for editing specs at this point.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, so let's see. Last week in the RDF working group, they agreed to do a first public working draft of the JSON-LD syntax and the JSON-LD API, which is great news. That publication is contingent on us making sure that we have all the IPR in order by July 12th. So the RDF working group is going to review the IPR commitments next Wednesday, and then the following Thursday, there's going to be a first public working draft publication for the documents. We have all of the IPR commitments that we need, except for Josh Mandel's. I haven't been able to get in touch with him. I sent him a couple of emails, but we're basically waiting on Josh, and once Josh puts his IPR commitment in, we're good to go. Okay, so next up is the protocol for editing the specs. Are there any questions on the IPR commitments? Where we are with that?
I saw that Mark Burbeck committed for the syntax, but not for the API.
Yeah. Because he didn't have any input on the API. I didn't think that he needed to do any kind of input. So Mark's listed as an author on the JSON-LD syntax, because when we first started, it started as kind of this set of modifications to RDFJ, which was a kind of a very, very primordial precursor to the JSON-LD syntax. Now, we've since then removed all of the text from RDFJ, but there are a number of just concepts that kind of came from Mark and RDFJ, so that's why he's on the syntax document. But RDFJ never had an API, and Mark never really gave us any input on the JSON-LD API. Okay. Any other questions on IPR before we continue? All right. The next, thing up is the protocol for editing the specs from now on. We need to be very careful to not accept text changes. By text changes, I mean basically get pull requests or direct edits to the spec that don't go through one of the editors from people that are not in the RDF working group. So basically, the way we've been operating is anybody can go ahead and make changes to the spec, and really only Greg and Marcus and myself, and from time to time Dave Longley and Dave Lane have been making modifications to the spec. Going forward, the only people that should be making modifications to the spec are Marcus, Greg, myself, Nicholas, and any other member of the RDF working group. If we allow any other text to be modified in the spec, it raises a whole bunch of intellectual property concerns, meaning that we don't have IPR coverage for those edits, and it can slow the process up later on down the road. So just be very careful about modifying, doing, accepting Git pull requests from people. If they're modifying the spec, we can't allow that anymore. But what we can do is we can look at their modifications and reword them, or you know, look at the suggestion that they're making and basically come up with our own wording. Does that make sense? Is that clear? I'm hoping that it wasn't too confusing.
So is it open for making edits at this point, or were we waiting for FPWD?
So we were waiting for FPWD. We could probably start making edits at this point. I have, I still need to finalize the FPWD document based on the status of the document sections that Tom Roessler is going to send me. So ideally, we'd not change the documents. But if people feel like you guys want to change the documents at this point and start making edits, we can do that. I can just do the FPWD modifications to the final document we presented to the RDF working group. And we'll just have to make sure to kind of backport those fixes or changes to the specs that are in source control. Does that work? Did you have any specific edits you wanted to make to the documents before July 12th, Greg?
Dave Longley had made a change and left a bug as a result of that, and I think he didn't go fix the bug because you'd asked him to not make any more changes. So
right.
I think we should probably fix that one bug. It's
okay.
I think it's a is, and it should be an is not for vice versa.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. I mean, I think that making that change is fine. I'll just make sure not to pull from the latest spec copy when I do the FPWD stuff. I'll just modify the documents in place, the FP documents in place. Okay. So yeah. So feel free to make edits to the documents then. Because I'll just work on the static version of the spec. Okay, anything else on the FPWD or IPR issues with JSON-LE syntax in the API?
Are we in the future SteelTop or are we switching over to Mercury?
We are continuing with GitHub. We're going to keep everything in Git and GitHub,
okay.
And I'm going to mirror the GitHub repo into W3C's Mercurial repo. So we will continue to operate the way we've been operating. It seems to be working fairly well for us, unless anybody has, you know, unless anybody disagrees and wants to move over to the W3C system.
No, thank you.
Those are my sentiments exactly.
And that goes for the issue tracker as well.
Yeah. So we just need to be very careful especially when we get to last call. Right now, we need to make sure that we're responsive to people that are putting comments into the specs. But once we get to last call, we need to track those issues, and the chairs may decide to track the issues in the W3C issue tracker just to make sure that we capture everything that needs to be captured. Because the W3C issue tracker does, you know, track comments that come in fairly well, or automatically rather. We'd have to track those comments by hand, which would be a pain. Okay. Anything else before we move on? Okay. Issue 133, this has to do with a requirement that the Wikidata folks have with being able to express multiple languages or being able to express data that has multiple language translations. So perhaps, Greg, you could do a quick intro to this issue, and then Denny, if you could kind of talk a bit about what you need and different solutions that you think might be possible with Jason LD.
Mm-hmm.
So go ahead, Greg, and then Denny.
Yeah. So the observation basically was that for sites such as Wikidata, or really any place that's trying to maintain information in multiple languages simultaneously, RDF certainly allows this to be done reasonably well using language tagged literals. But from a JSON perspective, it's very useful to be able to use a language identifier as a key so that you can access elements of a, basically a subgraph by name. Otherwise, you would be left with, say, having an array of values and having to iterate through them in order to find the one that you're interested in. And then subsequent information on the Wikidata talk pages indicated that it would be useful to be able to group other things underneath the same language tag. For instance, videos that happen to be in a language, or other types of things, or certainly to collect together all of the tags, all of the language bits in some sub-element of the graph, as opposed to an alternative mechanism in which you might have a property reference the language by key, and then just have the values hanging off of those keys as strings. So there are, in the issue, you'll see that there are two different approaches to this, which I summarized in my comment someplace. Let me find the link in here. I tried to summarize the two approaches in this comment here, where we basically look at some sample turtle and two different ways of relating that. One is with, say, a comment containing an object with keys who are languages and value strings, which I call value mapping, and the other with a language string containing the properties comment and, say, label that are in different languages, which would allow for potentially putting other information down at that level as well. So that was my understanding of where Wikidata was coming from and the way that we would approach that. I think there's certainly, Marcus has expressed some dissatisfaction with that type of a representation.
Okay. Denny, could you kind of give us a quick overview of the ideal markup scenario? What kind of data or what kind of structure ideally would you work with given the choice?
So, thanks for having this.
Oh, unfortunately, your audio is really breaking up on us. Go ahead and try speaking again. Denny, we can't hear you at all, unfortunately. Try dialing back in, and
okay.
Hopefully we'll be able to hear you then. Of course, just when we need the it to work, it craps out on us. So just going back, Marcus, maybe you could kind of fill in and let us know what your concern is here with the proposals Greg has put forward. I'll scribe for you.
Hang on a sec. Well, basically, I think it was that on one hand, it's rather, I don't know, it feels a bit confusing, or at least it was confusing for me to understand what's really going on, and from where Greg is coming with his proposal, And on the other hand, I think that we can think by using the graph keyword and having, well, different subgraphs for one for each language. So we just specify the default language in a context and have a graph for specific language. So here is an example of that.
And then, And Nicholas, you're on the team as well. Oh, sorry, go ahead, Marcus.
It's just the only disadvantage of that approach is to iterate over the subgraphs because you can't directly access it as in Greg's proposal.
Okay. And Nicholas, you're on the queue?
Yes. I think that I at this time I agree mostly with Marcus on the in regard to the second example, only because I have a fear that it might be hard to understand data looking like this, because even the first suggestion, which I am mostly for, I've suggested it along with others, I think that both forms actually deviate a bit from the shape of linked data as we strive to express it, because we adhere to the entity attribute value shape of things in general. Everything is, it should be clear by looking at the data what the subject is, and that things, the terms are attributes of the subject with values. Of course, there are places where we can't really do that because JSON is very terse and sometimes it hasn't the expressive shape that we need to get certain expressions possible. But my fear is that if we start to change the general entity attribute value shape for specific things to something more, much closer to presentation needs or slices of categories, there's a general concern from my end that that kind of JSON is generally representing data which isn't, it's somehow digested or skewed. Sometimes it's transformed to just be outputted to a rendering template, so it basically looks like the actual layout of an HTML template. In other cases, which are even more troublesome, the data is actually grouped into various categories, but it isn't clear if that category is just an aspect of the described resource or if it's actually a resource in and of itself. I've seen lots of data like that in XML, and that's a general concern that if JSON-LD supports very differently shaped data, we might end up with a scenario where it's hard to actually read the underlying representation model from the surface.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think so. I guess the concern here is that I think that makes a lot of sense. The concern is that this is a Wikidata project, and if we can't represent something that is fairly common in the Wikidata world, then it could be that JSON-LD, we've found an area where JSON-LD can't be applied. It just seems like JSON-LD should be able to be applied to the Wikidata use case fairly easily, and if we can't do that, then we may want to understand why that's the case, right? Why is it that, you know, this seemingly fairly common use case is very difficult to support in JSON-LD. So Denny, let's try again with your audio. Could you kind of go explain the underlying use case here, and if you see any other way to kind of represent the data.
Okay, let's see if you hear me now. Do you hear me now?
Yeah, perfect.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. Perfect. What in this use case, what we want to represent is, as Greg said, that an entity or that something that's an identifier has labels in several languages. So we have a connection with the label property, or basically with a key label, which, I mean, obviously this can be something else. But the thing is that after that, we don't just have an array of objects, but rather, again, an associative map with the languages pointing to it, or any other keys. There's also a pattern that I think I saw in issue 134, basically, that the values of the property are not just listed as objects which you would have to iterate and then find the one that you're looking for, but rather have a key to each of those objects that you can use to get to it and access it. Because this is a pattern that whenever you write JSON, whenever you write JavaScript and access a JSON object, you just go through the keys. You just iterate deeper into your structure. You just go into your structure using the keys and don't have suddenly a loop inside where you ask for an object with a specific ID or something. It wouldn't even be possible to have a one-liner to access the object asking for. Does this make any sense?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yep. Yeah, certainly.
Denny, by that logic, it looks like either of these two mechanisms, the value map or the property map, might equally serve your needs?
Let me understand what you mean with two with these two options. I'm not sure I followed so far because I was dropping out earlier.
Yeah. So the first option was basically you have an object which basically is the subject definition, which contains keys treated as properties or predicates,
mm-hmm.
and then you can that its value would be an object whose keys are languages or language identifiers, whose values are the strings for which that language applies. That was, I believe, I called that a value map. Property map would basically invert the predicate key and the language key. So you would have your subject definition containing keys that were language identifiers whose value was an object that contained properties. Now that last one was based more on where I understood you were coming from. But given what you just said, it seems to me that both of them work equally well.
Right, that's what I said, both of them work equally well. What I didn't say yet is that, but it's something that's problematic in RDF anyway, and to be honest, I don't have a perfect solution for that yet, so maybe I will get out smarter now soon. The thing is that if you want, for example, connect, we have like a label like in the example case on the website saying EN the Queen and DE the Königin. Now we want to add further information to this label. It's not just to the label itself, like saying, okay, this is how you pronounce it and things. Well, in RDF, you would probably use an intermediate node or something like this to do this, to connect it with the WAF file of the pronunciation. I'm not exactly sure how this would be represented. But in JSON, if I don't even think about RDF, I would actually just use an object here. Instead of having the string, the queen, I would use an object here, then with a value, the queen, and then with further properties, like, for example, a link to the audio file or a link to the IPR code of the word and so on. But I do realize that this is a problem that is actually already on the RDF level because we can't have literal values on the subject position. So I'm not sure if this is something that that's definitely out of scope for JSONLD to tackle, I guess. But my solution would be, if I were just thinking about JSON, not about JSONLD, to use, instead of the simple string literal as a value, an object again and give it structure.
Nicholas, you're on the queue.
This, my point here now is basically relating to the distinction of value map and property map. I think that we have two quite distinct things here. On the one hand, we have the general value map ID, which is represented by the use of, in this case, language as a key, and in issue 134, the IRI of something as a key. In both of these cases, we take the property of something and say that we want the value here to be a map of certain values of that property. Every object in that map will be a distinct resource. And that works for a lot of scenarios, and it's quite useful, I think, although we should really evaluate all the different cases to make sure that it's generally understandable when you read data looking like that. The other situation, the property map case, where you actually divide a description of the same resource into different bags or category groups. In this case, we have language as the common denominator. But if I understand correctly, it's not always the case that we have the actual RDF literal language value, but as you've said, it might be the Dublin Core language property of a video or something like that. I think that we might be able to support both these cases. The value map is quite easy. We just say container ID or container language, and perhaps even container some property value if we want to partition on a specific property. In the other case, I believe that Marcus actually has a great point there, that we could possibly leverage graph here and on the top level divide a description of one resource into different graphs, where each graph only contains properties of a certain category. And in this case, that category would be language. But we wouldn't define a mechanism to automatically insert that language at each place in the graph, but we would define some sort of, perhaps we could define a context modifier that would look sort of like the property map that Greg has defined. Also, we could have to... Yeah, we would have to repeat the ID in each graph there, but sorry, Greg, continue.
I'm sorry, I was just thinking we could extend the idea of having a container graph, which might be similar to container ID, where the graph property could contain an object whose keys were the graph names. And that might be one way of dealing with this. Although in this case, I'm not exactly think these graphs don't actually identify different named graphs. They just identify different objects.
Yeah,
with a different context. So it wouldn't really work in that case.
No. If you had names for them, they would probably look something like example.org/item1.en and item1.gb or GDE or something. So the way you, in Apache at least, can contact negotiate on language, so they would be different documents in different languages.
So I guess let's try and narrow down the proposals on the table. We've got three as four, well, maybe four with what was just discussed, but we have what Marcus has proposed, which is basically create multiple graphs, and each graph is associated with a specific language, like English or German. So there's that one. There are both of Greg's proposals, right, which is one where you have the property, and then inside the property you have all of the languages, and then the data associated with each language. And then the other one where you have the language as the top level item, and then all of the properties as sub items. I think out of all of these, I don't know, the reason that we're trying to address this issue is we want it to be easy for developers to access language data just by using a path, just using a regular JavaScript path, so foo.bar.en to get the English name for bar. So I don't think, Marcus, your proposal in the beginning, I don't think allows that to happen. It requires you to do some kind of iteration, right? And I think from what I'm hearing, Denny, that doesn't work for you. Is that correct?
Yes, the iteration is, I mean, just imagine you're being a JavaScript developer and try to access one of these things.
Right. Okay. So, to me, that means
Sorry, Mono, I just wanted to throw one other thing in there that Denny had brought up, and that was potentially using something like an unlabeled node as a value and using an RDF value property to indicate the primary thing, for instance, name being referencing an unlabeled node whose RDF value property was decoding in, and then you could add other properties on there as well if that was a usage pattern that Denny had considered.
It is one, yes.
The
trouble is we're just writing up this usage pattern and we expect it to actually have been here in a week or so. And to have our RDF serialization being written down by then. From my side, it will be much easier to actually then show you what we like expect in the RDF. We can still change that then, and then see how this can be turned into JSON-LV. Because I'm having
I think having
trouble with following the discussion, to be honest.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're not the only one. It is very difficult talking about all of the different approaches over the phone. But I think what we do have is we have a pretty general idea. I mean, I feel I have a much better idea of what Denny wants and what Greg is proposing at this point. To me, it seems like Marcus's proposal won't work for Denny. The upside with Marcus's proposal is we don't have to change anything with JSON-LD, but if it doesn't support the Wikidata use case, then you know we really want to support the Wikidata use case. So the two options that Greg's put on the table, out of both of those, I think I would prefer us to do the one where you have the property as the parent and then each language as the child. So, for example, label.es, label.de, label.it. That would be, in my view, a bit better than having the language as the top-level container. That's kind of an approach that's, I don't know. It's a bit confusing.
What I was trying, and I completely see that. What I was trying to suggest using an unnamed node was, if we look at that pattern where we're using what I called the value map, where the actual values are strings, if alternatively, the value could be an unlabeled node, then that would allow you to assert other information. So I think in the RDF pattern, RDF value is a distinguished property that can be used in cases like this. You can, I've seen some reification of literal, with a language tag literal, where the string becomes the RDF value property, and then say the language becomes like a Dublin Core language property of an unlabeled node. So if we had a pattern that allowed us to, say, use this where you had, you know, subject with RDFS comment, and then there is a EN property, which is indicates the language, and then after that is an unlabeled node for which the that language now becomes the context language, or perhaps is even folded in, and it's the language is specified separately in a context within that value object, that might be something that would allow Denny to be able to assert other information associated with that property, such as pronunciation, things like that.
Mm-hmm. In general, I'd be careful about that because the pattern of using RDF value is quite limited to structured data types. I've seen it used in Dublin Core. I have never seen it used. Well, I've almost never seen it used like that, but there is one important case where I've seen it, and that's the SCOS XL, the SCOS Extended Labels schema, which I'd certainly recommend for this case, because that is one use case which is exactly what Greg describes here. So SCOS XL is what to check out for that, because that's actually a defined usage pattern which creates structured properties. But I'm not sure that it would help in this case. It might actually complicate the situation. So while I recommend to take a look at that, I don't recommend to apply that pattern to the general expression of literals, because that resulting RDF might be quite tricky to use if it's not in the general shape of simple literals with language tags. However, I think that being said, we'll move on to the idea of separate graphs, which Marcus has proposed and Greg has also touched upon in two ways, because if you want to have one JSON LD document which represents the, in actuality it would represent several documents. It would represent each JSON LD document for a specific language. I mean, if you use content negotiation, you can get, if you have the system set up for it, you can get RDF back with only the Swedish labels or the English labels or the German labels. But if you wanted to merge them together, you would have three separate graphs. If we only used that and the existing JSON LD, we would end up with what Marcus has proposed. However, Greg has proposed two extensions, two separate ways of extending that. And one is to use deep probing and just define null properties for each language, but say that the values should be probed, and then within each value we would have an object with the ID and the labels in the specific language and any other property of interest for that language, for instance a video in a specific language, and that would work if we reintroduce deep probing. But we might also do the other thing, which is much more close to issue 133 and issue 134, and that is to use container graph. And each key there would represent the specific graph, and you would also bind the language, so you would say EN in the context, you would say that EN is actually the IRI for the named graph, which you would get back if you did content negotiation on the RDF or similar, so, or possibly a blank node bound to the value of each language. So you would have a very strange named graph, but you'd still be able to manage to leverage the container extension, which we're discussing. I'm not sure which one of these is good, but...
So, Danny, you had at one point mentioned that... let's see. The ideal shape of the data for you, what exactly does that look like? Is it foo.bar.en? I'm going to type out some things in IRC, so... so there are three things there, right? To look up the English language for the bar property. My understanding is that what would be ideal, at least for the Wikidata use case, is the first one. Is that correct? Out of all three of those options, the first one would be the ideal. Ah, okay.
Sorry, I'm still not sure what you mean with first one. I'm always kidding.
Well, whatever you typed out in IRC, that if that's what you want, then
for labels, yes, basically. For other properties, let me just think how it would look like.
I agree, Nicholas. A Etherpad session for this would be very helpful.
Yeah. Yeah.
So while Denny's typing that out, Denny also said something earlier in the call that I don't know if we've addressed, and that's the ability to associate things like how you pronounce a certain word or the etymology of a certain word and associating that with the language. So label.en.pronunciation or label.en.etymology. What we... may want, or what we could do, I think JSON-LD supports that use case, because Denny could express that in JSON-LD, but it wouldn't necessarily translate over to RDF, if that makes sense. So you can do label.en.pronunciation, assuming that we add the feature that allows you to do label.en. If we say that you can do, I'm going to type something out in IRC, label.en is and actually an object where value is foo and pronunciation is right, so if we support something like that, assuming that value is aliased at value, you could do that in JSON-LD, but the pronunciation wouldn't come across in RDF, unless we figure out some kind of crazy automatic mapping into RDF.
But there is, with SCOS Excel, there are terms for those things.
Like pronunciation?
Yeah, I mean, if
but,
you just
read... But you can't associate them with a language, can you?
No, but the language is... I mean, if we just define the... If we extended container to take, for instance, Dublin Core language, to say container Dublin Core language for the label in this case, you would map the EN to language and then value to RDF value and pronunciation... or whatever it's called in SCOS Excel to that property.
Could you type up an example of that, Nicholas? Because it sounds compelling, but I can't visualize it.
Well, first you'd need within the container. I'll try to type as I talk. You'd say for label here that it would be the ID would be SCOS Excel Pref Label or something. I don't remember what SCOS Excel actually includes, but and then container for that would be, I'm sure that there is a language property in SCOS Excel as well, but...
Well, all I'm seeing is there's a label type, and then there's alt label, hidden label, label relation, literal form, and pref label. It's a tiny spec. Yeah,
maybe should you use other terms. Then it's correct to do this, because that would be the definition of label in this case. And then given your example, you would say in the actual data, you would say label. And given that this is the generally extended container, which you have two specific issues for concerning only IRI and language. But if we did a map and said that this definition, I'm sorry, I have to rephrase that, I respelled it. That's not container for us, it's context, like that.
Mm-hmm.
So the context says that you have the term label, and the term label value is an object which maps each key to another object in which automatically you assert that the language for that object is the value from the key. So it's the same as with language, which we have in issue 133, but extended to support any given property.
Yeah.
And then you'd define IRIs for value and pronunciation, and you would get the DC language inserted into that object with the value of the key.
So Marcus is on the queue.
I was wondering, it's important for Danny to keep everything language related in one subtree, or if you can have a label and pronunciation at the same level and both have then a subkey which is English or German or
the answer is more complicated. So no, it's not important to have everything in one subtree, but it is important to somehow connect the pronunciation with the actual label because of the following case. If you have, for example, a person with several names, like Mark Twain and Samuel Clemens, then you would connect the pronunciation to the actual label, not to the entity. And this needs somehow to be preserved. Does this make sense?
Yes.
I can't hear you.
Oh, sorry. I type it.
Yes, so I think, Marcus, the gist of that was that it's not important to have them together, but it is important to be able to connect the pronunciation with the label. So not important to have them in the same tree, but they need to be connected in some way.
That was basically, I just typed in what my thought was that, because it just looks like an anonymous object or an unlabeled object, that one of the properties, and I happen to use RDF value there, and that perhaps there's some controversy over that, but we could come up with something, or Wikidata would come up with some property that implies this is the primary property of this unlabeled node, which then allows you to attach a bunch of other stuff. And in RDF, that's just modeled using an unlabeled node. We are using the language mapping here to be able to access this node using
as a hash, you know, using dot notation. But it, you know, it's sort of like if we were to use at value. Right now, at value is restricted to only contain value, language, and type. But if, for instance, it contained anything else, it might now not be a value object, but might be a unnamed object where that value is translated to some other property.
Right. I think that it would be safer to use RDF value or, in this case, GOS XL literal form. So not let.
Yeah, that's fine with me. Yeah.
Just to distinguish them. Otherwise, we'll end up making at value even more overloaded than at type.
But that sort of implies then that in the RDF, what you're doing is you're modeling these values using
nodes.
Nodes, exactly.
Yeah, but that's the price. Well, RDF is simple in the literal. For the literals, RDF has taken a pragmatic path, and when it did that, we have to pay the price that if we want to reify literals and say more things, we have to do actual resources from them. And it could be argued that there should have been resources from the beginning and that it should only be a very surface short syntax instead of as today where we have language tagged or data type tagged literal things which actually are quite strange in the theoretical world.
Yeah.
But
Denny, is it very important that the RDF contain things like pronunciation for a particular label? So what I'm saying is that we could make it such that the JSON LD has, you know, the language value like en.value and then en.pronunciation, but if you convert to RDF, you lose that data. You lose the pronunciation, you know, you lose everything but the literal value.
I don't think they want
to. Immediately important, but it will be later.
Yeah,
okay.
I don't think
so that tells me that. Right. So that tells me that the only solution here is to inject a blank node there, right?
Yeah. And I think that, I mean, RDF fully supports this. It's just that you can't use simple literals for obvious reasons because you can't describe them unless you start with the literal as subject, but then you would say the pronunciation goes for anything with that string value, and that's a no-go. So
I guess what we're really talking about here is some kind of macro mechanism that makes it easy to express it in JSON-LD, but can also translate the data to RDF, including the creation of blank nodes and all the stuff that you'd need to be able to move this data across in a non-lossy way. So,
well, basically, there are two aspects of it. The tricky thing, I mean, you could today just use GOS XL and reify literals. That's done in RDF all over the place when you need structured labels for things. This is just a structured label scenario, and that's what GOS XL is for. What complicates things is that we haven't discussed that before, and now we're discussing it in conjunction with introducing the more powerful container mechanism where you sort of fold in values of certain
mm-hmm.
properties. But that's very orthogonal, and they can be combined here for very good value for Wikidata, but they are orthogonal in general.
Right. Okay, so we're getting close to the end of the call with still no real resolution in sight. I think, at least I feel I have a much better grasp on Denny's use case or Wikidata's use case. So we may be talking about, as Nicholas pointed out, two orthogonal things. The first thing is the whole language container thing. The second one is the ability to make data easily accessible, make language data easily accessible, and annotate data associated with a language. So, for example, being able to express the pronunciation of a particular text string. Let's see. So Denny is saying in an ideal world, yeah, you'd have label.en, value, and pronunciation.
Yeah, probably that's a bit too automatic. I understand that, but in RDF, when we deal with this, we repeat ourselves. We say RDF as label, and then just the value, and then we say SCOSX as label. So we say the same thing explicitly, and it might be a bit too advanced to introduce different aspects in the same expression in JSON-LD.
Yeah. Although, you know, that is the ideal, though, right? That's what we're shooting for.
I know. I understand that Danny also sees that. The trick is that we have to make at value, for instance, be dualistic and behave. Well, we're getting close to quantum theory or string theory. is it a particle or a wave? It's both.
Okay. Well, to me, it seems that the you know, whatever, I don't know what the correct name for it, value map or property map, but the thing where you have foo.en equals, you know, the value comma, and then the pronunciation is something that we could do. That seems like the best potential solution, at least as far as I can see. And then figuring out some way to auto-generate a blank node for the pronunciation of that.
I think, well, you need a blank node for both the value and the pronunciation so that they're related by being in this, on the same node.
Right.
But I think what Denny typed in there, the last part of it, where you've got WUSA has a SCOS label property that's a node, and then the node has a pref label being its principal value of USA, and then a pronunciation. That looks like a good model forward. I think that follows out of the value class side of this, my proposal, if the value can be an unlabeled node rather than or in addition to just a string.
Okay. And so, Nicholas, you're saying that you'd be okay with that path forward?
Yeah, that for me would be these two. Let me see if I can... it would be... I'm typing out a context example here with these defined. Or whatever language property is suitable for the structured property.
Yeah, I just don't understand the container DC language. Are you suggesting that what that does is it takes the I'm not exactly sure how that translates.
It's directly isomorphic to the container language. But the only difference that should I type some example?
Could the expanded form of that? Like to what it expands?
Well, this is just context
equally,
so far. Oh,
I'm equally confused by that, Nicholas. I don't understand what DC language does.
I'll type an expansion here. Hold on. Whoops.
Where did my example go? Did I paste it? No. Oh, God. I'll switch from this. I'll try to type it out in Vim instead.
You know, Etherpad or something like that really would be useful, because every time we go to type out examples, it's it's painful in IRC. On the other hand, it gets captured in the minutes. So.
Yeah, yeah. I thought that I could do it quickly, but I'll just do it in an editor instead and paste it.
All right, so let's we're at the top of the hour now. I guess we're still going to wait for your example, Nicholas. Could we put a proposal forward that basically says support language maps via the container language pattern in context? Does it seem like this is a use case that we want to support in JSON-LD?
I think so. I think so
as well, just because it seems to me, Denny, I mean, if you don't have this feature, is JSON-LD a no-go for Wikidata? Okay.
I think the key there is we need a solution that eliminates the need to do iteration.
Yeah.
That's the principal
thing.
Because he has complex modeling requirements that are complex in RDF in general. So, of course, they're going to be complex in JSON-LD. So I do look forward to seeing, Denny, your RDF examples, what you're looking for. That will help a lot in getting this down. But my feeling is we're sort of on the track of something that can work.
Yeah.
And Denny, don't apologize for hijacking the call. This is exactly what we needed to discuss, and your use case really helps us kind of find some clarity on this, because until you came along, it wasn't really, you know, a priority, and now it's pretty clear that it is a priority. Let me put a proposal in here, just a straw poll really quickly, and see what people feel about it. So this proposal, support language maps via container language pattern, just says we want to support language maps. It doesn't say necessarily how we do it, but now we have a pretty good idea of what Denny would like to see, and I think Nicholas and Greg have kind of mapped out what that could look like using BlankNode. So we have a couple of other things that we need to discuss about it, but in general, it sounds to me like the group would like to support language maps. So go ahead and plus one, minus one, plus zero that. Yeah, Nicholas, we'll get to ID and regular properties, but it's let's see if we can, with the understanding that we'd get to ID and regular properties. Let's see. And I think, I don't know what Dave Longley was on this. I think he was just a plus zero. Dave Lane, plus zero, plus one, minus one. Okay. All right, so let's go ahead and resolve to actually tackle this. So we're going to support language maps via container language, and then we're going to try to achieve the type of markup that Denny has put into IRC. How's the example coming, Nicholas?
I pasted it a bit earlier. I can paste it again here. This one.
Okay.
It's what happens is that the key is interpreted as the property DC language with the value of the key, and just implicitly.
Okay.
It's the same behavior as with language, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the case for that,
Where comes the English from?
It comes
like
from...
Like in your example.
I think you're missing a layer.
Yeah.
It's label XL colon objects with an EN whose value is...
There.
Yeah.
That's the one.
Right.
Okay.
And you could put many other languages there and pronunciations for the different ones.
The value is not at value. Value is some other property.
Yeah, or the value
pref label or
possibly, quite probably, the SCOS literal form, SCOS Excel literal form property would be better.
Literal form, right.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Go ahead, Nicholas, and then we'll end the call.
Yeah, we don't have a specific issue for that. Should we do that, or should we? I mean, we have 133 and 134 for language and ID. Should we have one other for general properties, or will we tackle that in conjunction with this?
We should have another issue for general properties.
Yeah.
Just to make sure that we're tracking it, and we might actually want another issue for how we do this mapping, how we achieve Denny's ideal markup example. Because that's, as you said, that's an orthogonal kind of discussion.
Yeah, maybe even container.
Yeah, how do you associate pronunciation with a label, I guess?
Yeah.
I think that is really the gist of 133. So I think we can, and I can update that with some more examples based upon my thoughts from today.
Yeah, that would be very
All
helpful.
Right.
Okay. Go ahead, Nicholas.
Yeah, I was thinking that this definition of label Excel could probably be used at the top level for graphs as well, if we knew that they were graphs somehow, to insert Dublin Core language for the description of one specific resource. I'll have to examine that more closely. But it should be mentioned that the general container property, I've seen cases for that in other places, though I can't recall them right off the top of my head. To be able to use other properties as keys can be quite helpful in general.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we'll tackle that when we get to it. Okay.
Yeah.
Thanks, everyone, for the call. We'll go ahead and I guess we'll kind of work through these on the mailing list and the issue tracker and try to get solution for Denny together. Thank you, Denny, for joining us on the call today and taking the time to kind of explain your use case. You're more than welcome to join us on other calls when we discuss this stuff. This is, you know, completely open to the public call, so feel free to join us if you have any other input or have any other concerns about JSON-LD not addressing your use cases. Yes, always Tuesdays at this time. Okay. Anything else before we hang up?
Nope.
All right. Thanks, guys, for the call. Have a great weekend.
Thank you. You too.
Bye.
Thanks, you too.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you.